And it gives me great pleasure to introduce Matt S. from Orchid.
Hey guys, I'm Matt, I'm an alcoholic. All right, so you guys ever see two people in sobriety and they get together and they have a baby and you're like, oh man, I wonder how that kid's gonna turn out. Me, I'm now that kid turns out. That's kind of how my story started. You know, my story started right here in this room. Knowing my parents, I might have been conceived in this room. Who knows? But the thing is, so my parents got together in sobriety, very early sobriety, and had me, and I didn't make them any less sick, definitely. And so my life started out, you know, coming to these meetings, but bouncing around from home to home. And in those first 5 years, you know, I lived with my mom a lot. And when I was living with my mom, there was a lot of pain. I don't remember a whole lot from that time, but I remember not feeling safe. I remember I didn't feel safe and I didn't feel loved. And I was scared a lot. And then I lived with my dad. And with my dad, I remember, you know, feeling safe and feeling loved. And, you know, under my mom's house, I had, brothers and, you know, siblings and suffered all kinds of different, hard stuff. But that's the thing that I carry with me. And that's the thing that I carried with me throughout my life, is that feeling of not being safe. So after those 5 years, my dad got full custody. And so at first that was great news because I felt safe with him, right? I felt safe and loved. And so like I said, you know, both my parents were in the program. So unfortunately, I think my dad needed that pressure coming from my mom, because as soon as I went to live with him, you know, everything changed. And I no longer felt safe and I no longer felt loved. And what followed was a particularly unfortunate brand of dry drunk for the next, you know, 13 years while I was raised in that household. And that's super important for my story, because that is what sobriety became to me. Sobriety was getting yelled at. AA was, you know, a little boy sitting on his bed telling his dad it's okay because he's just happy it's over. Surrounded by smashed dressers and destroyed furniture, and, you know, just, it doesn't matter if it was okay or not, but he was happy that it was done. So he told his dad it's okay. And then it would happen again a week later. And so that's the way that was. And so I carried that into being a teenager. And so because I didn't feel safe and I didn't feel loved, I felt not good enough, I don't think. And so I ended up projecting that feeling onto the rest of the world. In a way that was quite unbearable. I meet kids that were like I am, and I remember the way I was. It's hard to be around people like that, because, frankly, they're annoying. I was annoying. I was annoying to be around. Everything was always a battle. I used to get out when I was playing wall ball in elementary school, but I would refuse to go out. I would sit there and I would cry and I'd be like, it wasn't me. And I would make a scene out of everything because I needed that. I needed that little win. I needed every little thing I could get to feel okay about myself. And when I didn't have that, I made a scene and I made it everybody else's problem. And that's the way elementary school was. That's the way junior high was. And then that's the way high school was. Needless to say, I didn't have very many friends. And there weren't a lot of people that were on my side. So this left me with this feeling of just wanting to belong, wanting to be a part of. And that's what I was always looking forward to, or that's what I was always looking for, was just for somebody to accept me and to love me. And so throughout high school, I'm trying to make friends and not really making friends. I play sports. I was actually rather good at sports. So that gave me a team. The teammates, again, didn't really like me, but they were forced to hang out with me. So at least I had people to be around. And so then I remember about junior year, I remember finding out that people were like drinking and going to parties and stuff like that. I didn't think that was real. I thought that was something that only really happened in movies. I was like, wow, kids in high school like actually go out and they actually drink and they go to parties? And so immediately what follows is, of course, FOMO. And I'm just afraid of missing out on this thing and I feel bad. And so after that, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about going to parties and getting to see people and getting to experience this thing that I feel like I'm missing out on. And so the first time I end up getting drunk, it's like my 17th birthday, and I talk my dad into going out, just like going out for my birthday and going to a movie or something, leaving me and all my friends alone, in our house. And he does. And so a bunch of my friends come over and bring alcohol and we drink, and I don't have that experience that so many of you guys have where you take that first sip and everything fades away. I don't have that. But the night went on, and the next morning, I remember waking up and I had the feeling of, wow, I was a part of something. My friends were around. I had people around. And that became my alcoholism. That became my addiction. That became what I was chasing. Not the drunk, but the feeling of being a part of it, the feeling of not missing out on something. And so that's what I was focused on for, you know, my senior year followed that. And, you know, I played sports. And next thing you know, I'm really trying to go to parties. I'm trying to go to all these things. But it's not really working out. Nobody wants me around. You know, and I'm not the same person I was, but I was not a cool kid. I was not a popular kid, so I was not really invited to parties. But it was definitely spent chasing a drunk and chasing experience that I was not getting. So I ended up applying to colleges and getting a scholarship to play water polo. And that is why I went to college. I did not go to college for school. I did not go to college to do anything but get this experience that I felt like I was missing out on. And so at that point I'd only drank a handful of times. And then I went to school, and that's when the floodgates of everything opened. That's when I had all those experiences that I felt like I was missing out on. I had friends, and we were like not just friends, we were all living in the same buildings, and we were all getting high during the day and playing video games and, you know, going out and drinking and on the weekends. And, you know, we had this fun game, or I thought it was fun, where we would all black out and then have a good time the next day figuring out what we did. And everybody would walk up, yo, this is crazy. You did this. And we'd be like, yo, that's cool. But they're not like, yo, that's cool. They're like, you're kind of a dick for that. Like, and I'm like, yo, that's crazy. I'm so cool. Let's see, where was I? And so the thing, so, but the drugs and the alcohol weren't the thing at that point. It was the fact that I had friends and I was around people and I felt like I belonged. And I was going crazy though. And then, so next thing you know, all those people and those friends and the feeling of being belonged kind of started to fade away because they're not doing all the things that I'm doing. They're not blacking out, or they're not killing a bottle of tequila or vodka by themselves every night on a weekend. They're not getting into random fights and, you know, hitting on every girl they can find and doing just the crazy stuff that I was doing. Next thing you know, some of my friends are starting to fade away, and as the years went on, I'm getting less and less involved. And I feel less and less like I belong, but I'm still chasing that same feeling. I'm still chasing that initial high that I had of you know, being a part of everything. So as the years have go on, in sophomore and junior and senior year, everybody else starts to slow down a little bit. They all start to focus more on like what they're going to do in life, what their classes are doing. But I don't want to do that. I want to keep the party going. And so I'm still focused on drinking and going out. And that's where I find myself, you know, feeling wrong. Just like there's something wrong here. And, you know, I'm trying to find a girlfriend because I feel alone and I feel like I don't belong. And everybody else is joining frats and I'm not joining a frat. I ended up going to Europe. And I went to Europe because it sounded like a fun place to drink. Everybody else went to Europe because they wanted to experience Europe. And I'm like, okay, how many different places in Europe can I get drunk? So, went to Europe, came back, and, you know, still just, like, feeling very empty and, like, I'm not good enough. These are where all the fair-weather friends come in. You know, I'll have a group of friends for, like, a year, and then they start to go away. Because, you know, they can't hang with me, or I'm doing messed up stuff, and every new year I have this new group of friends. My senior year, I end up not playing water polo my senior year, and I hurt my shoulder, and I'm like, okay, I'm finally going to join a frat, because this is what I'm here to do anyways. I'm here to, you know, party and have fun. So I end up getting into this frat, getting this girlfriend, and this girlfriend, and I'm not someone who can have healthy relationships, you know, at least not at that point in time. And so I get this girlfriend, and I am wildly insecure and acting out. And next thing you know, I'm on this cocaine binge-fueled, you know, bender, trying to fight this dude that's her friend. And she didn't like that. So, so she ends up breaking up with me the next morning. I bet you guys can guess how I dealt with that. I racked a couple lines, chugged some tequila, and next thing you know, I'm in the back of a police car. So this cop was trying to be nice. I'm in a really bad place in my life, and he's trying to be cool. He's trying to take me to the hospital, get me checked out, maybe get me put in a triage. And I did not want to go. I wanted to go get drunk, and I wanted to go find the next party. So while we're in this hospital, they send me into the bathroom to take a urine sample. And I come out, and he's talking to the nurse, and the front door is right there. So I bolt out the front door of the hospital, and I just go. In the state I was in, I thought I was free. I thought I was gone. And so I'm like, I got out of there. The cops just gonna be like, dang, I guess we lost him. He's good. Got us. That's not what happened at all. What proceeded was probably the most demoralizing situation I've ever been in. They alerted the school first. And so what the school did, they sent out an email to every student and every student's parents, letting them know that there's a potentially dangerous person around the campus. Like, had a very, like, vague outline of the situation. That was fun. I have two helicopters circling the city that my college is in looking for me. It's a full-blown manhunt. And there's about 12 cop cars. Just the whole... Everybody's looking for me. I was, you know, an escaped person in custody, essentially. So I get back to my apartment, and I'm like, where's the party, guys? Come on. So I call my friend. And he's like, yeah, we're over here. Come over here. It was a setup. I get there and I start like helping get ready, and next thing you know, my friend comes up like, there's a cop outside that wants to talk to you. I bolt out the back, hop the fence, and the entire house gets surrounded by like cops, and I'm looking around, I'm like, dang, I don't think I'm getting out of this one. So the cop was still super nice. Like, they took me to jail and, you know, they booked me, but I ended up getting out of that. They didn't like charge me with anything. They were more like trying to like get me away. But that put a real damper on my senior year because I almost got kicked out of school. So there was that. Actually, thank God. It's crazy that I didn't. There was a full-blown manhunt that I didn't get kicked out of school. But I had to have like a mediation with the principal or the dean, and what ended up coming up was I had to get drug tested every week for the rest of the school year, which sucked because I really, really liked drugs. I wasn't allowed to drink. I drank. And I had to have like mediation and like basically like tell these people I was sorry, and I had to go to AA meetings. That's where I like really attended my first AA meeting as like because I went to a bunch when I was a kid, but that was where I went to my first ones as like someone for me. But I wasn't gonna get sober. There was no even thought process in my head of getting sober. It's really funny because one morning I woke up on the couch that year saying like, dang, I think I might be an alcoholic. Getting sober still didn't come in my head. That wasn't going to happen. Because that's what I was living for. I was living for getting drunk. I was living for the party. So that year goes on. I almost don't make it because there's this one, we're on break one day, and I think I'm not going to get tested until we get back for the actual week of break. So I do some cocaine. And then they call me like the next day to come take a drug test. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. So smart me, I, when I was clean, froze some piss. And I'm like, okay, let's warm that up and then take it into the drug test. I didn't like warm it up right, and they're like, yo, the temperature was off, you have to come back. I'm like, I'll be back as soon as I can. I chug a whole bunch of water, take some pills that my drug dealer told me to take, and I don't know, I think they mixed up the samples or something, because somehow I escaped by. They don't, for some miracle, I don't get caught. And so I ended up getting through to graduation. And on graduation is one of the most infamous days in my own head, because I am so messed up at my graduation that the pictures of me and my parents are horrific. The face I make, it's very, it doesn't look good. But the thing is, like, that's how much of an alcoholic I was. Is I just spent 4 years going to school. I couldn't care less about the fact that I was graduating. I was happy that I get to start smoking weed again. I get to start drinking again. And I made it to the end. I'm not happy about the 4 years of work that I did. I'm not happy about, you know, getting a degree or walking across stage or having the people I love there to watch. I'm glad because I get to get messed up again. And I get messed up. So my family, they look at me and they're like, all right, Matt, stay safe. And they go on their own way. And so I end up, where am I at? Okay, so I end up kind of like just going around for the next like year, not really sure what I want to do. And the issue is like, I'm not done with the party yet. I've graduated, but I'm not done with the party. And so I don't know what to do. I have this brilliant idea. I'm going to become a DJ. I'm going to become a famous DJ. So I move to LA, and I start making music and start like DJing shows. And like, this is where things start getting really ramped up, because this is where like real addiction and like drugs come into play. I get this great idea that I'm going to start using Adderall that I buy off the street to help me achieve this dream. Next thing you know, I'm up for like 3-4 days at a time just working on music, and I'm following my dreams, and I'm working hard, and I'm doing the right things, guys. This is what it looks like when, you know, you're working hard. And so next thing you know, I'm hooked on this stuff, and I'm thinking, as long as I'm only working on music while I take these pills, then I'm not addicted and I'm okay. All I wanted to do was do work on music, guys. All I wanted to do was work on music. That's all I could think about all the time. And so I couldn't hold down a job, obviously. You know, I'd stay up for 3 days at a time, and then I'd get to sleep, and then I'd have trouble waking up for work the next morning. I'd be like, why am I so tired? I don't understand. I've never had this much trouble waking up. And it just really wasn't clicking in my head, the fact that, you know, I'm abusing stimulants. It just wasn't. So obviously, I can't hold down a job. I'm not doing a good job. I end up getting fired, which I'm okay with, because I don't want to go to that job anyways. And so I am, like, Ubering. And I'm, like, only going out at specific times where I can. I'm only going out at, like, Friday, Saturday nights, in, like, the middle of the night when I can make a bunch of money. And the rest of the time, I'm just getting high. We're on my computer for, like, you know, 3 days at a time. And that's the way the next, like, year and a half goes. And then COVID hits. And then, next thing you know, I stop doing the music thing because it kind of just falls apart. But I don't stop with the drugs. I don't stop with the Adderall, because that is... I love that. That's what my life's about now. So next thing you know, I'm just like playing video games. I'm just staying up for like 3 days straight playing video games, coming up with business ideas, starting like doing the first 10% of starting a business, and then like stopping, you know. I told my parents, like, I'm starting a company. Like, really? What's the company called? And I'm like, I'll tell you later. And then it's just like that. I still have like, it was a clothing company. It was one of the things I was doing. It's called Cute Drugs, because I'd heard a bunch of girls say like, oh, I love when my drugs look cute. So it was a bunch of like these like drug themed clothing for raves, right? I still have shirts. I still have boxes of shirts made, because I like made a bunch of stuff, and then it just like never, I just never did anything with it, because I had no follow through, because I was addicted to drugs, and that's the way that works. And so, like, that happens, and next thing you know, like, everything starts to crumble. I'm living at my parents' house, and I'm going through these, like, crazy, like, periods of, I'm going through, like, these crazy periods of, like, paranoia. I'm thinking my parents are sitting up outside my room trying to spy on me what I'm doing while I'm up for 3 days straight playing video games. I'm like, everybody knows I'm high. Yeah, everybody did know I was high. 100%. That wasn't paranoia. They knew I was high. You know, I'd be talking to, like, my family, and they'd be like, to my face while I'm talking, they'd be making these weird faces like, why does he look like that? And then so I knew there was a problem. I knew there was something going on. So instead of dealing with the problem, I move away somewhere where I can do my drugs in peace. And it didn't work, because I couldn't afford my own place. So now I have roommates. So now I have roommates that are like, well, who is this dude that's staying up all night? This is crazy. Why did we give him a room? And so I end up like seeing a psychiatrist, getting some antidepressants, because I'm like trying to figure out how to do my drugs in a more healthy way, right? In a more sustainable way. And so I'm like, okay, I'll take a break from the street Adderall, and then I'll like get an actual prescription for it, and then I'll start taking my own Adderall, and then I'll be good. Everything will be right. And so while I'm in this period, before I end up getting a prescription, I'm taking these antidepressants. I'm like missing out on all this. Okay, let's get some alcohol. I haven't drank in probably like a year because, you know, I've been into drift. So I get some Trulies. And so guys, when I tell you that I was not that person that was super into the feeling that alcohol gave me, I wasn't. Honestly, like most of the time it was hard to get down and I didn't really feel anything until I was like really, really drunk. I didn't have that warmth. I don't know. I just didn't get it. It wasn't my big thing. But this drink I had, that was the moment. I'm sitting on my couch in this house that I'm renting a room, and I think I have like one or two drinks, and then all of the things that were hard in life fade away. All this anxiety that I developed, all these fears and these feelings of self-loathing that I had, they all went away, and I was like, alcohol's pretty good. I could do this. So that's where I think my alcoholism really was born, is on that couch. You know, 6 years after I'd started drinking. And then next thing you know, I'm getting like 18 packs of like White Claws and be like, this will last me 3 days. And then they're gone. They're gone that night. Like, wow, that was really fast. How did that happen? So I end up moving. I end up moving to Sacramento because I'm with these roommates and they're like, this dude's crazy. This is wild, and I'm not having a good time there. So I run away to Sacramento, because that's where my problems are. My problems are where I'm at in that moment. They're not me. So I run away to Sacramento because I have some friends up there. And remember how like me and friends go? Those friends weren't my friend very, very quickly because I'm going crazy. I'm showing up at their house and we're drinking all the time. And at first they're like, this is great. Matt's so much fun. And then like, oh man, Matt's kind of a lot to deal with. I stopped getting calls to hang out with them. And I'm like, wow, that's so messed up. I moved up here to be with them. You know, to hang out with them, and now they're just not my friends anymore. That's so wrong. Like that, they're so mean. That's their problem. Like, and so now I'm in this city that I don't really know anyone else, and I'm getting all these jobs. I'm like, oh, I know. I'll start bartending. That's a great idea. So I get a job as a bartender. I get a job as a barback. And I start training to be a bartender, and I love this job because I can get drunk while I'm working. It's great. So this is where I'm actually going to take a pause really quick. So in the book, it talks about willingness to believe in a higher power. And that all you have to do is have that willingness, and that comes from somewhere. And if you have that willingness, you can develop a relationship with your higher power and have a spiritual experience. When I was in Europe, I was not doing super good. And I went to this like really, really famous church, this huge church. And I wasn't really believing in God. I'd always believed in something, but I was like having trouble. So I asked God, I was like, you know, give me a sign, help me believe in you. And I didn't get the answer that I wanted. I had a really bad time in Europe, you know. So I'm like, God's not real. No, I'm an atheist. So then I didn't really believe in God for like the longest time. But then every time I would start going down this really dark path, you know, dealing drugs, which I totally skipped that part of the story. I was doing that for a little bit. So like dealing drugs, you know, that thing with my girlfriend in college where the cops ended up looking for me. I was developing a pretty aggressive coke habit at that point. So now my alcoholism, where I am developing this really aggressive form where I'm like, I have like coffee and Jameson in my cup holder as I'm driving my 30-minute commute to my bartending job. So I'm at this job. I end up getting a really gnarly DUI. I'm pissed off for some reason. I actually know exactly why I'm pissed off. I'm just not gonna share. So I'm treating stoplights like they're stop signs. And so I pull up to a stoplight and just go right through. I didn't get T-boned on my driver's side not wearing a seatbelt at like 45 miles an hour. Luckily, I was driving a Toyota. So I walked away, no scratches. But that was a crazy situation because, the state that I'm in, I get out and I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna push my car out of here. No, I try to drive away. I try to start my car and try to drive away. It won't start. So then I get out, I'm like, let's push my car out of here. I don't know where I'm trying to push it, but let's get it out of the street so maybe I can run away. I don't know. The taking accountability for what just happened was not on my, list of what I was planning on doing. So I go to the car that hit me and I knock on the window and ask them to help me push my car out of the road. They didn't come out. They didn't roll down a window. I don't know. They might have been dying in there. Who knows? They were fine. But so the reason why I bring that up and I bring up the thing about the God is because I feel like it's right around this time I start to feel like there's something looking over. There's something watching out for me. Because every time I start going down this really, really dark path, something comes into my life and just screws it all up, makes my life really bad. But I stopped doing that thing. Okay, I stopped with my really aggressive blow habit. I kept drinking after this, but like I wasn't, I couldn't drink and drive anymore. So I needed to decide when I was gonna drink. I was too scared to get another DUI. I did not. I always heard the first DUI is like a, you get a grace, but after that they suck really bad. And so I sort of believe that it was my grandma. Because my grandma died when I was young. She's the one person that showed me like unconditional love until this point. And so I sort of believe like my grandma was like watching over me. And she was like putting a stop to all these like really aggressive things. And so that's like what opened up my willingness. That was the crack in the door. Okay, I don't know if you guys have heard the analogy is like you can't push a closed door, but if there's just a crack in it, you can push that open, and that's how spirituality can work in this program. And so she became my willingness to believe. I believed in her. And so I'm just gonna fast forward to the rest of the drunk log because it's more the same. I start doing Adderall again. Except so now I'm doing Adderall and I'm drinking. And there's no productivity, there's no drink, there's nothing being chased. I'm just taking Adderall, staying up for days at a time, showing up to work, cracked out, strung out, drinking. And this whole time, I'm like kind of believing. And there's something more. I'm talking to my grandma. I'm like, oh, I'm not feeling good here, Gaga. Like I'm feeling pretty lost. I'm sorry, I know you'd be really disappointed in me right now, and I don't know what to do. And then so I end up like three jobs later, I end up like getting fired and kind of just like sitting around my apartment for like 4 months, just taking Adderall and getting drunk. And I eventually look in my, look at my situation, like I need something to change. Not that yet though. Let's go back home and keep getting drunk. So I go back home. Now I'm living with my parents again, still bartending, still trying to figure out life. And I end up, drinking more, going with my parents to Alaska where I developed even more of an aggressive like drinking habit because I realized like, if I'm ever uncomfortable because I'm with my parents, I'm alone with my parents and I don't want to be alone with my parents. I'm a disappointment. So I start drinking a lot while I'm there because, it makes me feel, more comfortable. And then so when I come back, I just kind of keep doing that. I'm just still drinking a lot. I end up meeting this girl, and I really don't like this girl that much, but she lets me drink as much as I want. So I date her for like a year. She helped me find this apartment, so now I'm living in my own apartment. Guys, me living in my own apartment was not a good idea. I can do whatever I wanted. There was nobody to, like, I didn't even have to be anxious about, like, roommates, like, hating me anymore. So I was doing whatever I want. I got a substitute teaching job. which was awesome because guess what? If I didn't want to go to work that day, I just didn't pick up a job that day. So I'm, you know, drinking, and that's just what my life is for a pretty long time there. May or may not have gone to the corner store, some of I used to teach at this one school specifically a lot. And I may or may not have gone to the corner store at lunches and gotten Trulies and put it in my water bottle and then been drinking while I was teaching kids. Not great. Wasn't a good thing to do. But that's just where I was. And I didn't really care. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from my time out there is that how far it sunk in what I was willing to accept as far as like morality goes. I didn't feel bad about anything. There's nothing that I did where I was like, oh man, should I feel bad about this? No, I didn't care because I was just trying to survive and get to the next day. So I end up coming down with Valley Fever. I don't know if you guys know what Valley Fever is. It's like pneumonia. And basically I get like some time off work and they give me, disability for it. I milk that for like 6 months. I'm not working. I'm just getting drunk, taking Adderall, not working, basically staying in my apartment this entire time. And about 6 months into that, I am strung out. I've been up for 5 days, hadn't really eaten anything the entire time. Been in the situation that I've been in probably hundreds of times. I've been in that same exact situation. Hadn't slept, hadn't eaten, taking hundreds and hundreds of milligrams of, you know, Adderall and stimulants, hadn't talked to anybody. And then just in that moment, something broke. And I heard someone say it a long time ago. And I never forgot it. I finally came to the end of my own will. Because I don't know what happened. But in that moment, I decided I was done. I'd had enough. And so I called my doctor. And he's like, listen, I need to get sober. Actually, I texted. I was like, I need to get sober. And the first step is I need to get off this medication. And I need you to put it in my chart. Nobody can prescribe it to me. Because I'm abusing it. And they're like, all right. And in that moment, I had what I would come to find out is a spiritual experience. Because in this moment where I did this thing that's I've been known I needed to do it for years and years and years. This what should have been the scariest moment and something to fall with, I think, would be hard. I get this feeling of like happiness and warmth. I think to know that it was finally over and I was finally done. And so all day I'm like, you know, I'm kind of crying. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in like such a bad place. This is so bad. Because I'm finally like forced to take a look at myself and like what I'm going to have to come back from. But also I feel like a little bit whole, you know. And so I thoroughly, thoroughly believe that if you are just willing to take the first step, if you're willing to do the first thing, God will help you the rest of the way. Because that's what happened in that moment for me. All I did was take that first step, and God helped me the rest of the way. So I knew I needed help. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to start going to AA. I didn't get to a meeting for a couple weeks, though. And luckily, I had, you know, broken up with my dealers and talked to my doctor, so I couldn't get any more Adderall, and I wasn't drinking, so one day I went to Trader Joe's, and I see a six-pack, and I'm like, all right, I'll take that, and that wasn't even a decision, it just happened, and I'm drinking it, I'm like, oh, no, I'm gonna need some help, so I ended up finishing that six-pack, and then going to my first meeting here, And in that meeting, I talked about how I never wanted to be in AA because of my dad, and how I knew it to be a dry, drunk place. But this is all I got. this is the options that I have in front of me. All right. So let's see. What it was like. It's kind of what happened. What it's like now. Started working the steps. Found a sponsor. I think a sponsor that was really good for me. Because he was very, you know, rigorous in like his structure, and I thrive in structure. I don't enjoy structure, but I thrive in structure. And so I'm, you know, talking with him. And the thing is, like, when I do stuff, I really do it. I'm a real alcoholic, guys. Like, when I get going and doing something, I do it all the way. And so I'm like, okay, let's do this. I start working my steps, and I'm like, let's get them done. Except I don't like talking to people. That meeting before the meeting thing, I hate that. Okay, I love you guys. I don't want to talk to you guys, okay? I just want to, like, be around you, okay? So that's what I did. I showed up to meetings, and I found any excuse I could be to be here without having to, like, talk to somebody and without having to, like, be that person in the corner. So I'm always helping clean up. I'm doing finding whatever work I can do, so it's like I'm not like randomly standing in the corner, but I'm still here. Because being here felt good. It felt like it was the right place to be. It felt like I was in the right place. And so slowly I started to feel better. I started to feel good about myself. And then I started working those steps. And so back to the thing with my grandma, I already, through all that time, I'd already built a pretty strong relationship with my higher power because I started believing my grandma. And at some point I was like, dude, she's there. She's messing up my life, but she's there. And that kind of snowballed into a belief in God. And I read this book. It's called Conversations with God. You guys should check it out. And I really built this solid, like, relationship with my higher power. And so when I came to this program, I was lucky enough to already have that. I didn't really have to develop that. So I'm talking, I'm starting these steps, and I am really getting into this thing with God's will, okay? Like, yes, take the wheel. You can have it all. Do whatever God's will is, and I will be happy. And I start having this thing called, I call it, oh man, that's a quick fight. God's light, okay? It's this feeling that I feel like it is when I'm in God's will, and it's this warmth and this happiness, so I start chasing that. And so I'm going through these steps, and I do my fourth step, and, you know, I'm learning the magic of doing an inventory. I'm a huge inventory Nazi. I love these things. You know, whenever I'm having a problem, you know, you write it down, find the solution, figure out what your part is and stuff. And the big part is you got to write it down. You can't just figure, because sometimes I'll know my part and I'll be like, yeah, that's my part, and I'll move on. It doesn't work like that. You got to write it down. But then all the pain and all the turmoil and hardship from it goes away. It's like magic. And next thing you know, I start feeling good about myself. And I start having those things from when I was a kid where I, you know, all the self-loathing, the feelings like, oh, I'm not good enough, that all disappeared. And then I start, and people start seeing it in me. I start getting all these opportunities, and I start making my amends. And next thing you know, like, I feel like I'm a man. And I can show up to work every day, and I can be happy, and I can be of service to people. Like, I always thought of myself as being a lazy person. I didn't want to go to work. I didn't want to do things. I was trying to always cut in corners. And now I wake up every day, and I'm glad I get to go to work. I like being there. And that's not the person I was before. And so now, I don't... You know, I got 10 months. I'm not anyone crazy. You know, I don't. But and my life is so much better than it was. But it's not perfect. And the thing that I think I've learned the most in this program is that all you have to do is just try and do the next right thing. Okay, if you try your best, and you just don't purposefully, you know, make selfish decisions, and you just do whatever you can, God's gonna help you with the rest. Everything's gonna work out. Show up to meetings, stay sober, and everything's going to be okay. And that's what I learned. Today, I'm in a master's program to get my teaching credential and my master's degree in education. I get to show up every day and make an impact in, you know, young people's lives. I'm the head coach of Rigetti's water polo program, and I'm also running the youth program. So I get to, you know, hang out with, you know, younger kids and older kids, and I get to make a difference in their lives and do something important, and I get to show up and feel good about myself doing it. And I get to be a person that I feel is worthy of looking up to. I get to be a person that I feel is worthy of being a role model. And I think that's the most amazing thing about this program, is it turned me into someone that I feel like is worth looking up to. And I don't feel like that was true until I got in here. I think that's it for me, guys. Thanks. I'm an alcoholic.
All right, let's see. Let's give Matt another round of applause.